Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 199 event, which takes place in Los Angeles, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, our premium bets for UFC Fight Night 88 went 3-0 to profit 7.1 units overall. We won our plays on Lorenz Larkin, Chris Camozzi, and Rick Story. Unfortunately, we did also lose our one-unit free bet on Jessica Ai. Back to the present, UFC 199 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, Fox Sports 1, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. All right, Nick, kicking off the preliminary card on Fight Pass, we have a lightweight contest between Polo Reyes, who is 6-3, and Donghyung Maestro Kim, who is 13-7-3. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Kim minus 155, the comeback on Reyes plus 115. Looking over our sponsored sportsbook, fivedimes.eu, it is currently a pick'em at minus 110 either way. So more action coming in on Reyes. This should be a good fight because both these guys like to stand and bang. Both these guys have a little bit of skill, but both these guys are obviously flawed as well. So good way to start things off, I guess, on the card. And of course, Reyes has a background and he was a tough Latin America 2 semifinalist. He lost to Gutierrez, I believe, by TKO in the house. And of course, he's coming off a pretty big win for himself in the UFC. So he's got some momentum going on his side for sure. But I still think overall, the guy is just too flawed to actually make a deep run in the UFC. He needs a lot of improvements to be made. And I just don't see him really rounding out his game enough. I mean, this guy has a lot of power. He's got a little bit of takedown skill, but I mean, that's really not what he does. He likes to stand and bang a little bit and knock people out. But defensively, he's flawed on the feet as well. And he's also flawed a little bit on the ground. He needs to definitely, tighten up that submission defense. So there's a lot of holes in his game. He's an aggressive guy. He's going to come out banging. So Kim has to be careful, but stylistically, it's not a good matchup for him really, because he's going to have to look for those takedowns and put Kim on his back, because that's one of Kim's kryptonites for sure. I mean, that's why Kim lost his debut fight as well to Dominic Steele, obviously. I mean, stylistically, it was a tough matchup for him because he knew Steele was going to go for some takedowns. And, of course, Steele ended up slamming him and getting the win there too as well. So it was a big win for Steele. Kim, in this fight, is going to have a better matchup for him stylistically because he's going to be able to stand and bang a little bit more. And I think he is just a little bit ahead of Reyes at this point because Kim is a little bit more of the complete fighter, a little bit more experienced against solid competition as well. And I think he's just a step ahead of him right now in pretty much every area. So if it stays on the feet, I do believe that Kim is the better striker. If it goes to the ground, I believe that Kim is the better ground fighter as well. And I think if it hits the scorecards, which it probably won't in this fight. I mean, both these guys are pretty much finishers, so somebody will probably get put out. But if that's the case, I lean a little bit more towards Kim. So I do think both these guys, again, very vulnerable. Both of these guys have a lot of flaws defensively, but both these guys, their aggression typically ends stuff early. So I think we are going to see a pretty fun fight, but I do lean a little bit more towards Kim, so he's going to be my pick to win it.
Donghyung Kim is a very talented fighter, the lightweight version, not the welterweight version, and he just didn't get quite the fair shake in his UFC debut fighting out of his weight class. He got bullied, he got slammed, and he still was landing some strikes, and I do think that he is the better overall striker than Polo Reyes. Reyes is dangerous, he has power, but I don't think that he's nearly as good as he looked in that UFC debut. And I don't think Kim is nearly as bad as he looked in his UFC debut. So overall, I mean, Donghyung Kim here is more than twice as experienced as Polo Reyes. He's faced better opposition overall. Reyes being a veteran of tough Latin America, usually those guys come in pretty raw. I still think he's very raw. And while he does have some good power, I think Kim is just going to put on a bit of a striking clinic here, and I think people are really underestimating him, especially considering the circumstances of his UFC debut compared to Reyes's. So I agree with you, Nick. I think Donghyun Kim wins. I think he can win by knockout or simply outpoint Reyes over the course of three rounds and pick up a decision. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Kevin Casey, who is 9-4 with 2 no contests, taking on Elvis Mutapsic, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Casey, minus 140 to come back on Mutapsic, even money. Right now, the line has flipped. It's Mutapsic minus 150. The comeback on Casey is plus 130. Not really that much of a surprise. I mean, Casey typically doesn't get a ton of respect. A lot of people, I think, question, obviously, his durability, his chin. He seems to have cardio issues from time to time, but I understand all that, but the guy is pretty good. I think the guy is probably underrated across the board and a little bit better than everybody thinks. And he's been putting in the work at Black House, of course, and he's got himself to a point where he's actually a very legit UFC fighter in middleweight. I mean, the guy is focused basically on his wrestling, his grappling ability, and that's what wins him fights, but he has improved his stand up enough that he's got a little bit of power on the feet. You got to be careful with the guy. I mean, he definitely has enough power to knock people out. So he's more of a complete fighter than he's ever been. But the problem is, as the fight goes on and he's facing a better striker, if he can't control and slow down the pace of the fighter gets to the ground, then obviously the striker is going to have an advantage. And I just mentioned that chin isn't the greatest on Casey. So I think that's why people are basically fading him at this point. I think a lot of people believe that, Mutapsic is a really good fighter. I mean, he deserved to get a shot in the UFC. There's no question about that. It's been a long time coming, actually. He should probably been on the roster before his last fight. Now, of course, in his last fight against Barrasso, he did take it on short notice, and it was up a weight class as well. So Mutapsic in this fight is going to be back down to where he's a little bit more comfortable. It should do him well. And I think a little bit of the action coming in that way is because of that factor as well. He's going to have a full camp this time. He's going to be able to fight in his weight class. And of course, he's a devastating striker, and that's definitely the best part of his game. Now, Mutapsic is also pretty good on the ground. I mean, he's got some submission skill and he's got some wrestling, but his flaw is wrestling as well. He can get put on his back. He can get controlled. And that's what's cost him fights in the past. And Casey is going to look to do exactly that. So stylistically, it's basically, in my opinion right now, a grappler versus a striker type of matchup. And I'm going to favor the grappler a little bit here, because I think if Casey does not get knocked out, he probably grinds Mutapsic out and gets the decision win here. I doubt that we see a finish from Casey in this fight, because Elvis is pretty tough to put away, but I do believe that he can probably grind out enough to win the decision on the cards. It might get interesting as the fight gets a little bit later in rounds, maybe late round two, early round three, but overall, I still lean a little bit more towards Casey. Now, this isn't a very confident pick because, again, stylistically, it is a tough fight for both guys. I mean, both of these guys are facing what usually beats them, so it could go realistically anyway, but I still lean a little bit more towards Casey, and I think he's being disrespected. So I'm going to pick him for now.
Both guys, as Nick mentioned, are facing their kryptonite. Mutapsic has had issues against big, strong grapplers in the past, and Casey is not that great against talented strikers. That being said, I mean, Kevin Casey is all about that early explosion. Even in the fights that he's lost in the UFC, he has come out strong in that first round, and then maybe he wasn't able to put them away, and then he started to face some adversity as he got tired in the second or third round, and then that's when he fades and gets finished. Now, I do think that Kevin Casey can come out just like a bat out of hell in that first round and do some serious damage, whether it's with takedowns and ground and pound, whether it's with threatening submissions. Casey is extremely potent in the first frame. So Mutapsic is going to have to be extremely cautious. He's going to have to keep his hands low, probably, on the feet to try to avoid the takedown. He's going to have to watch his footwork to keep from being pressed into the fence, just get himself out of situations where Casey can close the distance against him. And honestly, Mutapsic, even though his UFC debut was at light heavyweight, I was not very impressed. I thought Barrasso should not have been able to outstrike him the way he did. So maybe Mutapsic's striking is a bit overrated. And I think if Kevin Casey is aggressive enough, he can just go out there and put Mutapsic on his back and get the finish. It really could happen. And Even if Casey doesn't get the finish, I think he might be able to survive a third round if he does enough damage or wears Mutafsic down enough, because Mutafsic didn't exactly look like a world beater on the feet or a cardio machine in his UFC debut, even though he barely had to cut any weight. So I think Kevin Casey is, which is dangerous for him in the third round because he does fade in fights, but I think Kevin Casey can win this fight. I think he can win the first two rounds, or he could pick up a finish early. So my pick is also going to be Kevin Casey. Now moving up to the light heavyweight division, we have Jonathan Wilson, who is 7-0, taking on Luis Frankenstein Henrique da Silva, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Wilson, minus 230, the comeback on, I'll call him Frankenstein, as plus 170, was plus 170, I should say. Right now, looking over five dimes, it's Wilson minus 230 still, and the comeback on Frankenstein is now plus 190. So line margins tightened up a little bit. They are not getting a ton of action at all on this fight. Compared to all the other fights on this card, the sports books are definitely getting the least amount of action on here on this one. So not a big surprise. I mean, honestly, both these guys are very untested. If you look back at Wilson, even before he entered the UFC and got that impressive win in his debut over Dempsey, I mean, on the regional circuit, he faced very bad, weak competition. So he's still raw. He's still developing his skill set. He's got some popularity. And of course, he's got his first win in the UFC. So he's going to be taking some strides. He's going to be, I think, a little bit more confident, a little bit more comfortable. And I'm sure he's a talented guy that's going to win some fights in the UFC. There's no doubt about that. So Wilson has a lot of good things going for him. But again, pre-UFC, his resume was garbage. So he's a little bit untested still. He does have a pretty good skill set, though. Now, Frankenstein, you could say basically the same thing. I mean, pre-UFC, he's got one of those Brazilian records that is very padded down. I mean, just weak competition overall. I mean, his last fight, though, over Alcantara, UFC veteran, that was a pretty good win for him. But if you look closer at that fight, he was losing that fight until he landed a big shot and ended up rocking Alcantara. And then just a kind of a strange type of finish. But he ended up winning. You got to give him credit. But overall, I'm not that impressed. I mean, the guy's only been training in mixed martial arts for a couple years. It says a lot for him to make his debut in the UFC already. So there's definitely something about him that the UFC likes. And it's probably his aggression, his heart, his toughness, because Frankenstein is one of these guys that really, even though, I mean, he's a striking based fighter, he's got a Muay Thai background. So you would think that he's a really dominant striker on the feet, but he's really not. I mean, that's not even an impressive part of his game. I think it's just the fact that he does swing to knock out his opponents almost with every strike. He's got good, strong kicks that he uses to the body, to the head. He's definitely dangerous because of what he puts in it. And he's the type of guy that he could look tired, but at the same time, he has the heart and the toughness to just keep on going and push forward a little bit too. So even if he's getting beat, you can't kind of count him out, especially against guys that will slow down a little bit and possibly fade. So he can outlast his opponents a little bit. And then on the ground, his wrestling and grappling definitely needs some work. He can be put on his back and controlled. But again, I think a lot of that all depends on what his opponent's game plan is going to be. And Wilson is also, he's not really known for his wrestling and his grappling style. He's also a striker. So this is a striker versus striker type of matchup. But Wilson, from his camp, he trains at Millennia MMA with Lorenz Larkin and crew. They have a ground game. Even though there's more strikers, it seems like, from time to time that come out of that camp, they are a well-rounded camp, and they do have some skill on the ground as well. So Wilson is definitely ahead of Frankenstein on the ground at this point. And I think he realizes, and his camp's going to realize, they could probably take this guy down and control him. And Wilson on top, even though he's more of a striking-based fighter, once he gets on top, he does have pretty good ground and pound, and he's capable of doing some good things on the ground as well. So I think what we're going to see here is both these guys are going to want to stand and bang. It probably starts out that way, but I think Wilson probably sneaks a takedown or two in and starts taking over the fight that way. So in my opinion, they're both very raw, and it's tough because they're both flawed, and they both haven't really been tested too far or have gone really to deep waters that often. I believe Wilson has only been to the cards one time, and Frankenstein's never been to the cards. So this is definitely a stern test for both guys. It's not going to be an easy fight for Wilson because I think Frankenstein's a tough guy to finish and get out of there, but I do lean a little more towards Wilson because I think he's ahead of Frankenstein currently right now, and both these guys definitely need to develop their game if they're going to make a serious impact at light heavyweight in the UFC. So my official pick is going to be Wilson to win.
Wilson had a nice UFC debut, picking up that quick knockout over Chris Dempsey, but again, that's Chris Dempsey. I mean, he's pretty much out of the UFC at this point and has really only been used to be fed to other prospects to get knockouts. And I do think that Henrique da Silva is a very powerful, dangerous striker. He has a very raw skill set, but I mean, 10-0 with 10 knockouts, you can't mock that. I mean, that's impressive, regardless of who he's faced. And he did pick up the win over Ildemar Alcatar in his last fight, but I will have to say, if you go back and watch Henrique da Silva's fight against Ildemar Alcantara, he was getting his butt kicked for about a round and three quarters, and then Alcantara got tired. Alcantara was winning clinch exchanges, Alcantara was getting takedowns, Alcantara was holding his own on the feet, but then when Alcantara got tired, I mean, da Silva just landed like one good punch in the clinch and he just kind of collapsed. So it was more just about da Silva surviving in that fight than anything. Now, with Jonathan Wilson, I just think Wilson is a little bit of the better overall athlete. I think Wilson is a little bit more technical overall. And even though he faced complete nobodies prior to his UFC debut, I thought he looked really good in the win over Chris Dempsey, even if, you know, Dempsey isn't exactly a UFC caliber light heavyweight. So both of these guys are inexperienced. Both are pretty raw, but the flaws that I saw in Henrique da Silva's game showed me that if Wilson wants, he can get takedowns and he shouldn't have too much of a problem keeping da Silva on his back. And on the feet, da Silva is a bit wild and reckless. That should leave a lot of openings for Wilson as well. So I do think that this is Wilson's fight to lose. I think, Henrique da Silva just needs a little bit more seasoning. I think he has decent potential, but you know, he has a lot of work to do. So my pick is going to be Jonathan Wilson. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Sean Strickland, who is 17-1, taking on Tom Breeze, who is 10-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Strickland, minus 135, the comeback on Breeze, minus 105. Not really surprised, but the line has flipped. Right now it's Breeze minus 140. The comeback on Strickland is plus 120. So there's been a lot of hype around Breeze for a long time. And even though his last fight wasn't really what everybody thought it would be, he obviously still has some of that respect. And you gotta definitely believe in him in some ways because he trains with a good camp. I mean, he is a very popular hyped prospect with skill and is going to be improving throughout his career. So he's getting better fight by fight. And honestly, that fight with Nakamura is very underrated. He's a pretty solid fighter. So, I mean, getting a win, and even if it is a tough fight for Breeze like that was, over a guy like Nakamura is a pretty impressive win. And then if you look at the other fights so far in the UFC for Breeze, I mean, Dutra, that was a pretty solid win. Pendred, I mean, it's not easy to beat Pendred. We all know that as well. He's just kind of one of those guys that's a thorn in people's, you know, behinds when he's fighting because Pendred just constantly brings it. So, I mean, finishing those two guys is definitely impressive. So Breeze has the potential to go far, but I still think he's going to have to improve his overall game and keep on getting better. And I'm not sure if he could beat a guy like Strickland, to be honest with you. I mean, Breeze is more known for his grappling skill. He is very slick on the ground. I mean, his submission game and his reversals, everything about it. He doesn't have the best wrestling game, but that's improving. It's not too bad. For this fight against Strickland, I think he's going to have some problems, though. And I think that's why I'm favoring Strickland a little bit here, because standing up, I think it should be interesting. I think Strickland is the better, more complete fighter. At times, though, he's a little bit too tentative for my liking. I got to admit that. I wish Strickland would be a little bit more consistent with the striking game. But he's a little bit unorthodox, has a little bit of power to go along with it, too. And Strickland has solid wrestling. And obviously, I mean, he's a hard guy to take down and control as well. And he's got some submission skills. So Strickland is a very complete fighter. You're getting a complete fighter taking on another complete fighter, and it should be a very close competitive type of matchup. I think the difference here for me is Strickland's toughness. I think Strickland is improving a little bit more. He's been training with the crew over at Quest, and it's really been doing him some good. So I think his confidence is going to be at an all-time high. It was a very impressive victory that he had over Garcia. Of course, we all know Garcia is a very talented fighter in his own right. And it's interesting because obviously Garcia and Breeze trained together, so Strickland already beat one of his teammates. So for TriStar, they're going to obviously have a good game plan in place for Strickland because, you know, one of their teammates just lost to him. So they really know Strickland well, but that I still don't think that's going to matter too much. I think what's going to happen here is Strickland's toughness. I think Strickland's going to get top position on if it goes to the ground a little bit. I don't think he's going to get subbed, caught up in Breeze's game or even the reversals that he has. I think on the feet, even though Breeze might be coming forward, utilizing his reach a little bit. Actually, Strickland has 3 inches of pure reach, which Breeze is the longer fighter, though. Breeze is about, I think, 2 or 3 inches taller. Still, though, I think Breeze is going to be coming forward a little bit more, and I think Strickland is going to be the one that's a little bit more tentative, but I think he's going to be landing the cleaner shots along the way. So I think it is going to be a coin flip type of fight, but I do expect this to be an even more difficult fight for Breeze, and I think Strickland is getting a little bit better. You can see the momentum kind of going towards him, and there's some question marks around Strickland. I mean, everybody, he was very impressive in his UFC debut, and then he had some bad spots along the way. People just expected that much more from Strickland, and I think he's showing it. I think he's starting to come into his own a little bit, and it's going to really come through in this fight here too. So awesome fight, but I'm going to go against the grain and pick Strickland to win. I just think he's going to be just a little bit ahead of Breeze in all areas, and I don't think he's going to get caught by Breeze along the way either. So I do think that Strickland probably wins on the cards, so he gets a decision here.
I'll be the first to admit I was very disappointed in Tom Breeze's last performance against Nakamura. He looked out of sorts. He looked flustered by somebody that had a decent offensive wrestling game. He was repeatedly taken down. He was in a bit of trouble in that fight, and he just could not keep Nakamura at bay. And even though he does have good length, great size, I mean, he is a massive welterweight, and he just could not keep Nakamura at distance, even though he does have a great jab. So that is a big concern in this fight heading into the bout against Sean Strickland, because, I mean, obviously Sean Strickland is better than Nakamura. I mean, if he was facing Nakamura, I'd pick Sean Strickland 10 out of 10 times. But that being said, Strickland has taken more of a focus on his offensive striking, and it showed. I mean, his last fight, he knocked out Breeze's teammate, Alex Garcia. It was a terrific performance. His stand-up is definitely improving. His power is improving. But that being said, he's not nearly as technical on the feet as Tom Breeze. Breeze does a great job of keeping that jab in his opponent's face as long as they're not trying, you know, desperately to get takedowns like Nakamura, who was very one-dimensional in that fight. So, you know, Breeze just had no answer, really. It was a difficult fight for him. I just don't think Sean Strickland has the same level of wrestling as Nakamura, and I think that he's going to want to test out his stand-up a lot more here as well. I think that's going to be a mistake. Breeze has some good power on the feet, although Strickland's chin is insane, so I do not expect Tom Breeze to get a knockout if he does win. So Strickland is probably going to be aggressive on the feet, but I do expect him to get tagged a lot. His striking defense is not very good. It's just more that he can take a shot, so he doesn't really worry about the defense as much. And that could end up biting him here. How I see this fight playing out is Strickland keeps it standing for the most part, kind of like he did in the Luke Barnett fight, and I think Tom Breeze just keeps him on the end of the jab. Even though Strickland does have a slightly longer reach, Breeze fights longer. He turns his body sideways a little bit more and keeps that jab out real long. And that'll make up for some of Sean Strickland's technical disadvantages as well. Strickland does throw a little bit more of the looping shots. So I see Breeze just picking up a lot of points in this fight. I don't think it's going to be nearly as entertaining as some other people think. And I expect Breeze to have really focused on the takedown defense after that last performance, especially because he trains at a camp like TriStar. And I'm sure that they were a bit flustered by his performance as well. So they've put in the time. And I just don't see Sean Strickland getting inside and landing a lot of takedowns in this fight. So I expect Tom Breeze to just kind of pick up a bit of a boring outpoint decision. So my pick is Tom Breeze. Now, kicking off the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card, we have a featherweight contest between Cole Miller, who is 21-9 with one no contest, and Alex Caceres, who is 11-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Miller -150, the comeback on Caceres +110 right now over five times. It is Miller -190, the comeback on Caceres is +165. So more love coming in on Miller. this should be a good fight. I mean, both these guys are very, very similar. Long for the weight class at 145, skilled in all areas of the game. Again, I mean, both these guys have some good striking, some technical striking skill, a little bit of power, nothing crazy on the feet as far as knockout power goes. But then on the ground, both these guys are very smooth, very technical. Obviously, if you're going to give one person an edge on the ground as far as pure technique goes, it's Miller. I mean, his BJJ is off the charts. I mean, he's very dangerous on the ground. Even if you put him on his back, you got to be very careful because he's capable of landing that or hitting an armbar triangle type of submission. So he's very slick, very smooth. He is the more technical fighter, I mean, across the board. Even his stand-up game, I think, overall, he's got some edges over Caceres. So this is going to be a tough fight, though, for him still. I think if any advantage that Caceres has in this fight, it's actually his wrestling. I think he might be able to get a takedown or two along the way, but he's got to be careful because Caceres is flawed defensively in the submission game. I mean, offensively, he could definitely submit people, but he makes so many mistakes on the ground defensively that it gets him in trouble from time to time. Now, he has improved it. I think that he's gotten better, and his submission defense is definitely – one time it was awful. Now at least it's getting decent. I mean, that's basically the main way the guy loses is by getting caught by a sub. And Miller is definitely one of the best submission artists he's fought. So this stylistically is not a very good matchup for Caceres. And I think that's why people are betting Miller overall. So on the feet, it should be close. I think Caceres has a little bit more pure power. And the way he mixes things up, and he's a little bit more unorthodox, but Miller's probably the better striker on the feet as well. So tough fight. I mean, if Caceres does not get subbed, I think he could probably get the decision here. But I think that Miller will probably catch him if Caceres makes another mistake underground type of fight, and Miller takes advantage of that as well. Now, both these guys, of course, are coming in on short notice. Miller was going to fight BJ Penn, and then, of course, BJ Penn had some issues and was pulled out of that fight, so Caceres stepped in. So both these guys are coming in on short notice, but it shouldn't really have an impact. I mean, normally these guys have pretty decent cardio as well, and they know each other well too, so they know what to prepare for. So it shouldn't be much of, you know, for either guy of a distraction coming in on short notice. I think they'll both be ready to fight. And I do lean a little bit more towards Miller. I think it will be probably more competitive up until the time maybe Miller does find that submission type of finish. I think it is going to be a coin flip type of fight, but I do lean Miller, and I think that everybody coming in that way is probably correct, but as it gets to a certain point, like right now, it's minus 190. I wouldn't lay that kind of juice. So be cautious if you are going to bet this fight, especially laying the juice on Miller. But overall, I do have to pick him to win because I do think he's the more skilled and talented fighter here.
Cole Miller and Alex Caceres were both short notice replacements. Miller was supposed to fight BJ Penn was supposed to fight Dennis Seaver. Miller replaced Seaver, and then BJ Penn got pulled, and now Alex Caceres is stepping in. So neither of these guys are getting full training camps. That being said, Cole Miller is just the longer fighter, and Alex Caceres, that's usually his biggest strength in fights, especially when he was down in the bantamweight division. He was able to utilize a pretty good reach for the bantamweight division and outpoint people, pick up some good straight punches along the way, maybe do some damage on the feet, and then he could utilize his offensive submission game on the ground. And against Cole Miller, all of those advantages disappear. Miller is actually an inch longer with his reach. I personally think Miller is an underrated striker, and he should be able to hold his own with Caceres in the stand-up portion, probably get the better of him. And on the ground, Cole Miller is a phenom. The guy is so creative on the canvas, whether he's on his back or he's in an offensive position on the ground. And Alex Caceres has had a history of getting himself in bad spots on the ground because he, you know, leaves a couple openings during scrambles, or maybe he thinks he can finesse his way out of something when he should have gone the more technical route. And I think Cole Miller can really punish him in that type of situation. So wherever this fight goes, I think Cole Miller does have the advantage. Neither guy has the greatest chin. So maybe if Caceres can crack Miller with something really heavy, then Miller could go down. But I think that's a long shot. And Cole Miller should just be the better overall, more well-prepared fighter in this contest. And I expect him to pick up a stoppage at some point, probably by submission. So my pick is going to be Cole Miller. Now dropping down to the women's strawweight division, we have Jessica Penney, who is 12-4, taking on Jessica Andrade, who is 13-5. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Panay, -210, the comeback on Andrade, +160. The line has dropped. Everybody coming in a little bit more towards Andrade. It is now -150 for Panay, and the comeback on Andrade is +130. Andrade is a very popular fighter. I mean, she is making her debut at 115 here. So that should be interesting because she is a small lady for the bantamweight division. There's no doubt about that. I mean, it's probably a good thing if she can make the weight cuts well and she could get herself down without really hurting herself too bad as far as, you know, her possibly her chin getting damaged or her being a little bit weaker with the weight cut basically and maybe her cardio issues. I think it probably does her a little bit better though. I think it'll probably make her stronger overall and she's going to be a little beast at 115. So Penne has a tough fight on her hands, especially because Andrade, again, is a little pit bull. She's a little powerhouse. I mean, on the feet, she comes and brings it. I mean, she's constantly attacking. She attacks with knockout punches. She flurries a lot. She has good takedowns, a really good guillotine choke. So Penne, again, has to be careful if she gets to the ground and not get caught up in that choke. But overall, I think Penne is actually the better fighter here. I think she's a little bit longer, of course. She's going to have some reach, pure reach advantage over Andrade. I think she's more technical on the feet. I think she's more technical, obviously, on the ground as well. And she's just the more complete fighter. Now, she's not going to have the power Andrade does, and she's not going to have the aggression Andrade brings to the table. So it should get interesting. If Penne cannot finish Andrade, then I could see Andrade winning on the scorecards and kind of having an impressive debut at 115. But I think overall, what bothers me in this fight is Andrade's defense is concerning a little bit. I mean, at times she does seem to slow down in fights a little bit. Her cardio is not the greatest, but it gets her by. And then, of course, defensively in the submission game, that's where I think it's her biggest weakness. I think she has been caught. She's been caught by making a silly mistake on her ground. And against Penne, if she does get the takedown and get this fight to the ground, she's probably going to get caught and submitted. So on the feet, Penne has to fight long. She's got to utilize her reach and really be a little bit more aggressive than she normally is and try to do some damage there and maybe possibly even try to take Andrade's back up against the cage or in a scenario like that to submit her. I think it's very possible she does that. And then, like I said, on the ground, I think she has a huge advantage over Andrade. She probably gets the finish there too. So it really is up to Andrade where the fight takes place, I think. I'm not sure if Penne can get some takedowns on Andrade. I mean, again, in a scramble or something like that, she might take her back. That's very possible. But I think Andrade can get some takedowns on Penne. Now, will she want to do that? I'm not sure. It all depends on fight IQ, all depends on game plan, and all depends on her defense in this fight. So I believe that Andrade will probably be winning this fight and then make a mistake and get caught. So I am going to pick Penne. I just think she's too technical. She's been in the spotlight. Obviously, she's fought the best of the best in the division already. So Penne, this is a tough fight to make your debut at 115, and Penne's going to probably make her pay for it and probably get a finish. So that's the way I lean. I could be wrong here because it seems like everybody else has the faith and has the confidence in Andrade, and they're going that way. But for me, I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to pick Penne to probably win by submission here.
And I'm going to slightly disagree. Now, obviously, Jessica Penne is tremendous on the ground. And even though Andrade is aggressive on the canvas and has a good guillotine choke, if Andrade gets put in a defensive position on the canvas, she could definitely be in trouble. That being said, on the feet, Andrade is so aggressive. And I think her power will translate pretty well dropping down to the women's strawweight division. She was always an undersized bantamweight. Probably if it was a perfect world, she'd be fighting in the 125-pound weight class, but it doesn't exist yet in the UFC. But she's dropping all the way down to 115. It's probably going to take a lot out of her. But if she's able to keep her strength, if she's able to keep some of the power, and if her conditioning is not affected or maybe improves by cutting off a little bit of muscle, then I think Jessica Andrade is going to be a bit of a force in the women's strawweight division. She is capable of just outworking opponents on the feet. She pushes an extremely high pace, lands a ton of volume of strikes, and Jessica Penne does not have very good offensive wrestling. She could have a lot of trouble trying to get this fight to the floor. Andrade, I mean, if you look at the pace of strikes for these two women, Andrade lands 5.6 strikes per minute compared to Penne, who lands less than two. So on the feet, I can see this fight kind of turning into Penne versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk, where, yeah, Penne didn't get knocked out, but she just got the absolute crap kicked out of her for three straight rounds because she wasn't able to get the fight to the floor, and her stand-up just was not effective. Panay is the longer fighter compared to Andrade, but she does not have any power on the feet. She has an okay jab, but that's not going to keep Andrade from getting in her face. So for me personally, unless Panay's able to be successful with takedowns with some way to get this fight to the canvas, I just see Andrade doing some work on her on the feet and really kind of punishing the fact that she's so one-dimensional with her offensive game. So my pick is going to be Jessica Andrade to either pick up a decision victory or maybe even a late TKO. Now moving up to the lightweight division, we have Beneil Dariush, who is 12-2, taking on James Vick, who is 9-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Dariush, -245, the comeback on Vick, +175. Everybody all aboard the Vick train. It's down to -185 for Dariush. The comeback on Vick is +160 now. So really, if you look at it, it's only a 15-cent drop on the dog. Line margins have tightened up a little bit as well at 5 dimes and across the board at Sportsbook. So it's not really as big, I guess, of a movement as everybody thinks. But still, I mean, there's no doubt that people were favoring Vick in this matchup and coming in and snatching up the dog money here. I can understand. I mean, Vic's a very talented fighter. I mean, he's a long fighter for the weight class. He's got good wrestling skill overall. I mean, he can get put on his back a little bit. Obviously, I mean, that's one flaw of his, but pretty much, I mean, in most cases, he's the better wrestler in those fights as well. And I mean, he's got the stand-up skill. He's got that length to go along with it. He's not an overwhelming striker, but he utilizes that reach pretty well in most cases. And he does have a little bit of underrated power to go along with it. And he's got the talk about chokes and submission skill. He's got that as well on the ground. I mean, he gets around your neck, you're pretty much done. I mean, he trains with Lloyd Irvin and crew, so you know he's going to be a very good fighter, coached well, and game playing well as well. So he's a very tough out at 155. Just with his length and his skill set, it's going to be tough. But I do believe that Dariush is the better fighter here in this spot. I mean, across the board, I think Dariush is the better striker. He's going to be at a reach disadvantage of about 4 inches, I believe. So that's going to be kind of tough to get around a little bit, but Dariush is still the more complete striker. I think he's the harder hitter. I think he mixes things up well enough that he can win a stand-up battle against Vic. On the ground, Dariush's wrestling and his takedown game is better. I think he's better as far as submission skill goes as well. Now, defensively, of course, against Jessa, that was a little bit concerning because Dariush, it looked like he faded a little bit in that second round. Chiesa got his back, and of course, that's what Chiesa does. He ends up finishing the fight. If he gets your back, you're pretty much done. And I was surprised to see him actually catch Dariush because his jiu-jitsu game's legit, but that tells you the sport is kind of crazy here. So can Vic replicate something like that against Dariush? I don't think so. I mean, if Vic gets around his neck for a guillotine choke or something like that, yes, of course. I mean, he gets that choke around anybody. I don't think many people are going to get out of it. So Vic could possibly do that, but I don't think he's going to have that kind of success as far as taking his back and sinking in a rear naked choke or anything against Dariush. I think Dariush is going to be able to control the tempo of this fight. He's going to be able to get the takedowns when he wants it. He's going to get to stay out of trouble. I mean, it's not going to be easy to get those takedowns against Vic, but I think Dariush can definitely do that. And even if it stays upright, I think Dariush definitely has the advantage there, like I said. So this is a fight for Dariush to win or lose, and I think he is going to win this fight. My main concern, I guess, would be the cardio, because Dariush at times, his cardio has been an issue, a little bit suspect. He tends to slow down as the fight goes, and he can't afford to do that. I know he's taking this fight on short notice, so that is a question mark, and it was definitely something that people have to think about coming into this fight, and maybe that's one of the reasons everybody is more so on Vic here in this spot. But still, skill set for skill set, I do believe that Dariush is above Vic at this point. I think his skill set's going to come through, and he's going to probably win his fight. So I am going to pick Dariush to win. I think he probably gets the job done. I don't know if he finishes Vic. I think he probably grinds him out and wins a close competitive decision. So that's where I'm going to go.
Beneil Dariush, James Vic are both making very quick turnarounds here. Dariush is very flustered and frustrated with his performance against Michael Chiesa, where he was dominating and then just made a mistake, started to slow down a bit in the second round, and then was a bit sloppy with his submission defense. And James Vick is coming off of a win, but he did get taken down a few times. And again, James Vick, I do think that he is a bit overrated. I mean, he's 9-0, which is great, but his striking is not that great, even though he's got tremendous length, a 76-inch reach for the lightweight division. And he does have some power, and he does have a very crafty guillotine choke, but I think Beneil Dariush is just better than him in all facets of MMA. Darius is a world-class Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist that did not show in his last fight where he made that kind of rookie mistake of only protecting his neck and letting Michael Chiesa just squeeze his chin. But that being said, I think Darius is way more technical on the feet than Vic. I expect him to really take advantage of Vic's major deficiencies in striking defense. In the stand-up portion, I expect Darius to do serious damage to Vic's legs with his kicks, and he's going to follow up with some heavy shots up top. Now, Vic might be able to take those shots. He does have a pretty good chin overall, but just the full package of Beneil Darius with how dangerous he can be on the ground if put in an offensive position, I think at some point in this fight, Darius finishes Vic. I think Vic is actually going to be the guy that's going to be shooting for takedowns. And as long as Darius can stuff those or reverse those or find some sort of a positive situation from Vic changing levels, then I see Beneil Darius either picking up a knockout or a submission along the way. So I think he can actually finish James Vic here, and I am definitely picking Darius to win. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Brian Ortega, who is 10-0 with one no contest, taking on Clay Guida, who is 32-13. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Ortega -185, the comeback on Guida +145. Right now, looking over the line at five dimes, it is Ortega -275, the comeback on Guida is +235. So, yes, I undershot this line a little bit, and those of you guys that came in on the -185, good take. But you guys got a really good line, and it won't drop back down to that spot. I don't think it will. I mean, if the sportsbooks get pounded with heavy, sharp action, maybe it's possible on Guida, but overall, I think it's going to stay around the 250 mark and higher possibly for Ortega. So good take on that. Like I said, those of you guys that came in on Ortega early on, this is a tough fight for Guida, but the problem here is stylistically how they match up. It's a tough fight for both guys because Ortega can be put on his back. He can be controlled a little bit. And Guida is definitely this type of grinder that will look to do that. He's a very intelligent fighter, of course. He's been in there with the best of the best. He's been in the sport for so long, and he's just such a great spark plug of a fighter. I mean, the guy's constantly bringing it. You know what you could expect. Guida comes to fight every time. But the problem is, I mean, in MMA fight years, he's way beyond the 34-year-old mark, which he is in real life, obviously. So I think Guida's absorbed a lot of punishment. He's getting older. All those wars that he's had is kind of finally catching up to him. His chin isn't really as good as what it once was. I think his submission defense has gotten pretty good overall through the years. I mean, the guy's been subbed eight times in his career, but in the UFC, that hasn't really been the case. Now, of course, he's been subbed two out of the last three times. But if you look a little bit closer, Guida's sub defense is definitely better than that. But against Ortega, I don't know if it's going to pass the test. I mean, Ortega is a very smooth, very slick grappler. One of the best, I think, at 145 right now as far as submission skill goes and finishing the fights. I mean, again, you can't put Ortega on the back, but off his back, he continues to work. He looks for submissions. He utilizes good elbows, an elbow attack that he can cut you open. He just makes life miserable. So you take Ortega down, you think, okay, I'm going to grind him out a little bit here. And then before you know it, you're kind of just trying to fend off everything he's throwing at you. So it's not an easy fight. And depending on the judges, even if Ortega gets on his back, they might like what they see from him as far as him staying busy, him being effective and causing damage off his back, or him possibly getting the sub, obviously, as well. Then it won't matter much, but him looking for the sub. So he can score. He's the type of fighter that even if he gets placed on his back, he could score points off his back and still probably make it a close decision. So in my opinion, Ortega is the better stand-up guy at this point, too. His stand-up is getting better. He can do a little bit of damage to Guida if it stays on the feet. And if Guida does shoot for a takedown and get it to the ground, Ortega probably catches him within three rounds and submits him as well. So I do understand why he should be the favorite here. I think Ortega is a good up-and-coming fighter that's only going to get better fight by fight as well, which is scary for the whole featherweight division because this guy definitely has some talent. But, I mean, at where it is right now, be careful as far as pure value goes because it comes down to this basically. If Guida does not get finished in this fight, he's going to probably win on the scorecards. So if he's able to grind Ortega out, he's going to get the decision more likely. Even if the judges like what they see from Ortega off their back, I mean, I bet two out of three judges will probably favor the wrestler in that spot. So, I mean, judges are terrible these days. We all know that. You don't know how they're going to score fights, so you never know. But I still think that, I mean, if Guida doesn't get finished, he probably has the edge, obviously, on a scorecard. So tough one to bet if you're laying almost 3-1 at this point. But that being said, I do have faith, and I think Ortega is probably going to get the finish inside the distance. So I'm picking Ortega to win this fight.
In terms of career momentum, these guys are moving in exact opposite directions. Brian Ortega is on the rise. He's already now ranked in the featherweight division, and Clay Guida just seems like he's just about on his way out. I mean, he used to train at Greg Jackson's, and then he tried to switch over to Alpha Male, and now he's training at Team Elevation. It just looks like he's trying to find the answer when the realistic answer is he's getting older and his chin isn't as good as it used to be. His reflexes aren't as good as it used to be, and his style isn't as aggressive and exciting as it used to be. And, you know, he's just starting to near the end of his career. It happens to everybody. So I think in this fight, Clay Guida just does not present many threats whatsoever. I mean, he used to be able to just outwork people with just this frenetic pace, and then having this incredible Energizer Bunny battery to be able to just keep going forever in fights. And it just doesn't work that way anymore. He's a lot more tentative. He's focusing a lot more on defense. And before, he just kind of threw caution to the wind. I mean, who forgets stuff like the Diego Sanchez fight? So, and that just doesn't work anymore because, I don't think his chin is as good as it used to be. And he just leaves himself exposed as more and more technical fighters are being added to these divisions. Now, Brian Ortega is the better, more powerful striker on the feet, even though he's not a refined technical masterpiece type of striker. He does have the ability to put people out. And on the ground, Ortega is extremely slick. I mean, we've seen multiple occasions now where he has just wrapped people up and put them out. And he has looked very, very good in his fight so far. And Clay Guida is a guy that is starting to get caught more and more in submissions. He's starting to get caught more and more on the feet, even though he is focusing more on defense and movement. And it's been less crowd pleasing. And I think what's going to happen here is Guida's going to get outstruck on the feet. And then at some point he's going to shoot in for a takedown, and he's either going to get reversed on the ground, or he is going to get caught in something from top position on the ground. Maybe Ortega wraps him with a triangle choke. His triangle choke is very good. Or he could get caught with a guillotine or something. I just don't think Clay Guida really has it anymore. So my pick is going to be Brian Ortega to pick up a stoppage victory at some point in this fight. Now, moving on to the pay-per-view main card, we have a lightweight contest between Dustin Poirier, who is 19-4, and Bobby Green, who is 23-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Poirier, -210, the comeback on Green, +160. Right now, over five dimes, it's -220 for Poirier. The comeback on Green is +180. So a little bit more action coming in Poirier's way. A lot of people are tying him up in parlays as well. Green has been out since his fight in 2014. I believe it was in November, his loss to Barboza. So he's been out on the shelf for almost a couple years now. And coming back against a guy like Poirier, which has had pretty good momentum, especially since he moved up to lightweight and is looking to become a serious title contender, it's a tough fight. I mean, it's stylistically the way these guys match up. Green is a pretty complete fighter, but the problem with Green is he's good enough on the feet to outpoint his opponents. He's got a little bit of power, but he's just not a dominant striker on the feet. I mean, he does like to put pressure, come forward. He uses good footwork, angles. I mean, it's fun watching him strike on the feet, but he's just, again, not an overwhelming striker on the feet where you're in all sorts of danger all the time. Then, of course, the wrestling aspect of things goes. I mean, he's got a good defensive wrestling game, but offensively, he doesn't really look for it enough. I think that he could utilize some offensive wrestling a little bit more, but it's okay. So offensively, it's just okay. Defensively, it's pretty good. It's hard to take Green down and control him. He scrambles out of positions well. And then, of course, Green does have a little bit of a sub game to go along with it. So Green is a pretty complete fighter and a smart fighter. I mean, he's a savvy vet, and he's the type of fighter that's gotten better throughout his career. Fight by fight, he just continues to improve. So with the time off, maybe it's done him a little bit of good here. I mean, and he's had definitely enough time to prepare for a guy like Poirier. Poirier, though, on the other hand, again, as I just mentioned, I mean, the guy's been looking great. His chin has been holding up a little bit better at 155. If any issue at all for Poirier, of course, sometimes it's his cardio. I mean, if he goes in deep water, sometimes he does have a tendency to slow down, but it hasn't been as much of an issue lately, it seems. And Poirier on the feet, he's a fun fighter to watch because he does have that. I mean, he can outpoint you on the feet, but he has some thunder to go behind it as well. I mean, he's got that kind of knockout power that he could be very effective on the feet in his stand-up game. So Poirier, dangerous on the feet. Of course, on the ground, he's very slick, has smooth submission game. If anything at all, I mean, he even has good offensive wrestling. I mean, he showed that recently as well. If anything at all, Poirier's takedown defense could get a little bit better. He can be put on his back by superior wrestlers and get control a little bit there. And then off his back, even though Poirier is very dangerous, you can still kind of grind him out and just kind of stay away from his sub attack there. So that's how Poirier loses typically, or of course, against very dominant strikers. His chin has been checked. His chin is a little bit concerning because he's been rocked several times and he's been knocked out before in his career as well. So that is a concern. But like I said, I think he's shown a little bit more toughness. The 155 going back up to lightweight, to me, it seems like it's helped his career a little bit more. He's a little bit fresher. He's a little bit more confident. He's been looking good. So this should be a good fight. I think that Poirier pretty much in every area across the board, except maybe takedown defense, has the edge over Green. So this is going to be a tough fight for Green to come back to because I'm not sure just how he beats him. I guess it would be outpointing him, using his angles and trying to score and land a little bit more on Poirier, maybe doing some damage, maybe getting that knockout. Because again, Poirier has been tagged, has been dropped. I don't expect Green to be a guy that knocks Poirier out, but you never know. I mean, it's possible. So I think Green's best way to win this fight is to basically outpoint Poirier, use those angles and kind of just work his striking game on the feet and hit the scorecards and win it that way. For Poirier, he's always capable of finishing fights. And then, of course, he can outpoint Green as well. So I do give all of the edges, I guess, here to Poirier in this fight. And I think that he probably does come through with a win. But this is a very strange spot for me. It's a spot where I think we're probably going to see Green do better than we all expect here and matches up maybe better than we all think against Poirier. So one of those sleeper fights that we all see it probably one way, that Poirier does have the advantages in this fight, but maybe Green shows up and just surprises us all here. So that's in the back of my mind. I think that's probably going to happen. So I'm going to lead with Poirier here, but this is one of those fights that I wouldn't be surprised at all if Green shows up and looks great and steals a decision win or possibly even maybe finishes Poirier along the way. So I'm going to pick Poirier to win though.
My biggest issue with Bobby Green is it's been so long since he's been active in the UFC. Dustin Poirier, in the meantime, has really risen through the rankings. Obviously, the win over Joe Duffy was huge. He looked tremendous in that fight. He mixed up aggressive striking with offensive grappling and was able to take the Irishman out of his game. I mean, it was extremely impressive. Now, Bobby Green is a very unique fighter. He has heavy body kicks. He has pretty good overall power in his hands. He mixes things up pretty well, and his wrestling isn't bad either. So he is a complete mixed martial artist. His problem is he kind of has this kind of cocky swagger to his style, and where he kind of no-sells whenever his opponent lands things. I think his defense is not as good as people think it is, and against people that can handle what he's throwing, or maybe people that utilize, you know, really good technique, he does run into issues a little bit. You know, just take the Edson Barboza fight, for instance, where, you know, Green was trying as hard as he could to get Barboza to engage in more of a brawl, and Barboza was just having none of it, stayed at his distance, and just kept picking him apart for three straight rounds. Where Green's at his best is where he's dictating the fight. Like the Josh Thompson fight, where Thompson was just sitting back trying to counter everything, and Green just pushed the action and was able to land, get out of the way, avoid some of the counters, was just able to outstrike and be the aggressor. I do not think that's going to happen here against Dustin Poirier. Poirier is a very aggressive striker, especially since moving up to the lightweight division. He has a lot of confidence in his hands. His chin is better now that he's not just killing himself to cut weight. And most impressively, he is really able to mix up his game, not just with the power on the feet, but you saw in the Joe Duffy fight where he can mix in takedowns to kind of throw his opponents off. That's something that Bobby Green is going to have in the back of his mind in this fight is, you know, when is Dustin Poirier going to shoot in for a takedown, perhaps? So what I see happening here is Green's going to be rusty, considering how long he's been out. And I think he's going to be thrown off by the aggression of Poirier. Poirier's going to dictate the pace. And I expect Poirier to either pick up a decision or a knockout victory at some point, but probably a decision because Green is pretty durable overall. But my pick is going to be Dustin Poirier. Now moving up to the middleweight division, we have Dan Henderson, who is 31-14, taking on Hector Lombard, who is 34-5-1 with 2 no contests. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I put Lombard -315, the comeback on Henderson +235. 315 was not enough because right now it's actually Lombard -400, the comeback on Henderson is +325. So 45-year-old Dan Henderson, people are fading him a little bit. Of course, he's not the same granite chin Henderson that we all used to know and respect and just think, man, how does he take that, absorb some of those punches? I mean, obviously recently to the likes of a guy like Vitor Belfort, he's been getting hit, damaged, knocked out. I mean, it's kind of sad to see him at this point. You know, even the Musasi fight, just be in that situation because Henderson has been a warrior throughout his career. So in my opinion, even though he's capable of winning fights because he's got that H-bomb that can end it against anybody, it's probably time to consider hanging him up. And maybe it's after this fight here for Henderson because he's got nothing to prove. I mean, the guy is all obviously a UFC Hall of Famer. I mean, he's a legend of the sport, world champion. He's everything. I mean, he's done amazing things in MMA and he doesn't really have to prove anything else. So I would like to see him before he takes too much more damage, probably hang him up soon. And again, this might be the fight because Lombard is one of those guys that, man, I mean, he's not a young bird by any means. I mean, he's 38 years old. So he's an aging veteran as well. And he's been in the sport for a long time, but he's just not quite in the spot where Henderson is. And of course, Lombard is an outstanding striker. He always has been. We all know about his judo background. He's able to maintain the fight upright. He's able to get takedowns when he wants to. He ragdolls people, basically. I mean, Lombard is a very talented fighter, very scary fighter. It's a shame that Lombard honestly didn't come over to the UFC before he did, because I think it would have been better for him. I mean, throughout his career, for sure. But that being said, in the UFC thus far, I honestly, overall, he hasn't really met the expectations everybody thought he would. I mean, he's had some pretty sloppy, questionable type of performances. I know you got to cut him some slack against Magny. Of course, he dropped down to 170. He almost finished Magny's last fight and then just kind of gassed out, and Magny was able to take over that fight. So credit Magny for that one. But overall, Lombard has enough gas to make it 3 rounds pretty strong in most cases. And I think one of his most impressive wins in the UFC came over Jake Shields. I mean, the way he was able to ragdoll Jake Shields was very impressive. But this is, again, a different stylistic fight. He's fighting a guy that is going to look to take his head off as well. And the difference is probably going to be Lombard's speed. He's going to be a little bit smaller. He's going to have the speed advantage, and he has an outstanding amount of knockout power as well. So he probably catches Henderson's chin along the way and knocks him out. I think that's what's probably going to happen. A lot of people probably agree with that as well. That's why we're seeing him get thrown in parlays, and even some straight bets came in Lombard's way as well. So he should get the W here. Now, he is moving back up to middleweight, and based on that last performance against Magny, you know, I don't know how much confidence you can have, especially against one punch from Henderson. I mean, just basically ending it anybody's night. So be careful there, laying 4-1. But overall, I do think the Lombard probably gets a win here, so I'm going to pick him to win.
Yeah, there's not much more to be said about this fight. Dan Henderson is getting way up there in years. Hector Lombard is as well, but I think, while I don't agree with Hector Lombard's decision to move up to to middleweight from welterweight, I thought at welterweight he could still be a potential contender, and at middleweight he's just going to get bullied by some of the bigger fighters, but Dan Henderson is not one of those bigger fighters that can bully him. Dan Henderson, while the H-bomb is always going to be something extremely dangerous, I mean, when was the last time you ever saw Hector Lombard hurt in a fight? I mean, the Neil Magny one, that was more just because he was exhausted and turtling up and not defending anymore. So against Dan Henderson in open space, I'm terrified for Dan Henderson. Hector Lombard still has that insane explosion, the brutal power the second he steps inside, and Dan Henderson cannot take those type of shots anymore. I mean, he used to be able to and weather it and then fire back, maybe mix in some wrestling, but he just doesn't have the reaction time anymore. He doesn't have the reflexes. He just, he just gets hit when people step in and try to land that quick shot like Vitor. And I think what's going to happen here is they're going to circle for a little bit. Lombard's going to step in. Lombard is going to absolutely blast Dan Henderson, and then Henderson's going to go down, and Lombard's going to follow up with some huge shots, and Henderson's probably going to stay down. So I expect Hector Lombard to pick up a pretty quick knockout victory in this fight, and I'm going to stand by that one. Now dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Max Holloway, who is 15-3, taking on Ricardo Lamas, who is 15-4. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I've been Holloway minus 260, the comeback on Lamas plus 180, and right now over at Five Dimes it's minus 325 for Holloway. Lamas is plus 265, so more action coming to Holloway's way. It's always tough. I mean, when you get two guys that are definitely, I mean, face it, Lamas has fought for the title, for crying out loud. He's definitely top of the food chain in the featherweight division. And then Holloway obviously working his way up, and he's beat some great fighters as of late as well. So you have two top contenders at featherweight going against each other. One guy is right now, I mean, Holloway's minus 325 over Lamas. So he's getting the respect, and it's hard to really argue that as well, because stylistically how they match up, I mean, Lamas is the more probably complete fighter of the two because of his wrestling game, because of his submission game to go along with it. But it's going to be tough to get Holloway down and control him in this spot. So if he's not able to do that, then obviously Holloway, even though he's a little bit taller, he doesn't have a reach advantage, honestly. It's surprising, but Lamas has a 2-inch reach advantage over him. But still, Holloway's still the longer fighter, and he's a better striker overall. Now, he doesn't typically have that one punch knockout power, but it's one of those cases that, I mean, he is a sniper. He puts punches together in combinations. He's effective with them, and he can get the fight done, especially against Lamas. If any question marks for me with Lamas, it's his chin. I mean, the guy's been knocked out three times thus far in his career, and he's been rocked before. It's just one of those things that, you know, against a good striker, you got to be definitely concerned with Lamas hanging in there and making it the full distance. If it hits the scorecards, I think this is probably going to be a competitive fight. A lot of people are probably going to be scratching their heads and thinking, man, I mean, who wins this type of fight? Because even though Holloway in space should be able to outpoint Lamas and be the better striker, Lamas is still going to bring it. And his striking game is definitely good enough to hang in there a little bit against a guy like Holloway. So I think this is going to be a good fight. I do lean towards Holloway as well. I think he probably finishes Lamas before it hits the scorecards. And if he doesn't, he probably still will get the win on points, because I think he can outpoint Lamas as well, Lamas. So good fight. Unfortunately for Lamas, I do agree with the early action. I think Holloway's probably going to get the job done, so I'm going to pick him to win this fight.
Lamas is definitely one of the best featherweights in the world. I just think Max Holloway is running red hot right now. I mean, 8 wins in a row, and he's getting better and better every time we see him. He has really started to master footwork and movement, and being able to get in, land good strikes, and then get out without getting hit back badly. I think Ricardo Lamas is just going to be in a bit of trouble here. Even though Max Holloway does not have a very long reach, he's extremely effective, and he's able to step in and then unload short combinations. I'm actually very, very impressed with his development overall. He mixes things up, he drops to the body, and then he just wears you down with punches. And then he's not the type of guy that is just going to knock you out with one big shot. He just lands strike after strike after strike, and then eventually you're just exhausted, or you're starting to get your bell rung a little bit, and maybe you get a little foggy, and then boom, he smells blood, and he just goes for the kill with crazy combinations. I just cannot believe how dangerous Max Holloway has become, especially after earlier in his UFC career where, you know, he was trading wins and losses. He has really started to put it together. And he has an underrated grappling game as well. Now, Ricardo Lamas has good power in his fists. He has some pretty good kicking game that he has started to improve even more. And he does use that pretty well at distance. So Holloway is going to have to kind of stay inside a little more and take away some of the kicking game from Lamas. And Lamas does have a very good wrestling game, and from top position, he does unleash some brutal ground and pound. I mean, what he did to Eric Koch, that was a horror film. So if Lamas is able to get on top of Holloway and stay there, and if he can get some space, he could do some serious damage. And if Lamas lands a big kick or something, he could do some damage. But Holloway has a great chin, and I think Holloway's takedown defense is pretty solid overall. I just think he's going to outwork and outpace Lamas. Lamas's biggest problem, other than the fact that his chin isn't that great, is the fact that he doesn't push the same type of pace as Holloway. I just see Holloway outpointing Lamas over the course of three rounds. And if he smells blood, he is going to absolutely go in and slaughter Lamas at some point if he does rock him. So I think this is definitely Max Holloway's fight to lose, although Lamas's wrestling could definitely be an equalizer if he's able to get a lot of takedowns. But I think Holloway picks this one up, whether it's a decision or a late stoppage. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a bantamweight title fight featuring Dominic Cruz, the champion, who is 21-1, in a trilogy battle against Uriah Faber, who is 33-8. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
I open Cruz minus 600, the comeback on Faber, plus 400 right now, looking over five dimes. It is minus 500 for Cruz. The comeback on Faber is plus 400. So early on, action was coming in on Cruz, and now we're seeing some action coming back into our Faber. Comeback exactly the same. So it seems like to be a fair and accurate line overall. Interesting, because I do think, honestly, I mean, I set the line. I still think it's a little bit too high. Now, I expect Cruz to win his fight, because he is the better fighter overall these days than Faber. But still, I think Faber can definitely be competitive. He just matches up pretty well with Cruz. And I think what we will see is a competitive fight that's each round is fairly close. So to me, I'm not quite sold on Cruz's comeback yet. I know he had a war with Dillashaw. I thought he lost that war personally. I thought Dillashaw won that fight. The judges gave it to Cruz. It was close enough where you knew they could get it kind of wrong there. And a lot of people out there do think that Cruz should have got it anyway. So there's a lot of split opinions on it. But that being said, I'm just not quite sold on him. I mean, Cruz has had a number of injuries, obviously, that's been hindering him throughout his bantamweight title run. And it just, to me, I don't know, it just kind of in the back of my mind leaves me a lot of questions about Cruz, even though he did have a war and he held up okay overall against a guy like Dillashaw. Still concerning, I think, because he's just been beat up so much and just injury prone throughout his career that 5-1, 6-1, even though he's been a pretty good champion, I don't know. It's tough. So this is a spot where if any time at all Faber could get the title, where UFC gold, it's probably this fight. But if you look at it, I mean, he's still a 5-1 underdog. So it's probably not going to happen for him. I mean, stylistically how they match up, I think the only real advantage Faber has is on the ground over Cruz. Cruz has improved his game, but still, I mean, Faber has some sneaky good submission skill, but is he going to be able to get to that spot again or get in a position where he can submit Cruz? Probably not. And overall on the feet, obviously, I think Cruz could do a little bit more damage and probably outstrike Faber. And he's a smart fighter with that movement, everything that he utilizes, he should have the edge. I'm expecting a competitive fight. So I think, again, the line is higher than it probably should be. So it's a dog or pass situation, but it's kind of hard to bet Faber at this spot as well, I would think, these days. So part of me is going to be pulling for Faber because, I mean, like I said, I think he's been way too good of a fighter and throughout his career, way too much of a popular fighter. Not to ever wear the UFC strap would be kind of a shame for him, but it's still going to be a tough test. And I'm going to officially pick Cruz to win because I do think, I mean, common sense should prevail here and Cruz should get the W.
Honestly, if you look at the way these fights have played out throughout their careers, the first time Faber picked up a quick guillotine choke submission, that was way back in the day when Cruz was still more of a raw fighter, focused more on wrestling than anything. Second time through, it was a very competitive fight where Cruz was throwing the more volume. Cruz was working on the outside, and Faber was focused on trying to find the small openings to land big power shots, and Faber did land a couple and rocked Cruz a couple times, and it ended up being a split decision for Cruz. But I think age is finally starting to catch up to Uriah Faber. We saw in his last fight against Frankie Sanes, Faber had some serious conditioning issues in that fight. He kind of went for the kill early against Sanes when he thought he had him hurt, and he gassed in the second and third rounds pretty bad. And this is a 5-round fight. Now, obviously, I don't think Faber's going to just go for it early in the fight unless he actually hurts Cruz. But going back and watching Cruz's fight against TJ Dillashaw, his movement was on point. His defense was great. He was able to get in and out and land those shots. I mean, personally, I thought that Dillashaw did enough to retain the title, especially because Cruz did start to slow down in the later rounds. But from what I was hearing afterwards, you know, Cruz was suffering from some plantar fasciitis. He had a pretty rough training camp overall. I think this time around, you're going to see as good of Dominick Cruz as you can get. I mean, I'm kind of reminded by the Cruz that showed up against Takeya Michigaki and just mopped the floor with him when he first returned from injury. I think that's the Cruz we're going to get here against Uriah Faber. I think Faber is starting to fade a little bit. I honestly do not think he deserved this title shot. Dominick Cruz is just so much better than Uriah Faber at this point, I believe. The only thing that he doesn't quite have on Faber's level is the power. And Faber doesn't have that much punching power. Cruz is such a student of the game. Like, he adds all these little intricacies to his offense, to his defense. I do not think Uriah Faber can properly prepare for the Dominick Cruz that is going to show up on Saturday night. And with the way that Cruz can just seamlessly transition takedowns into his game, I mean, he was able to take down TJ Dillashaw multiple times in that fight, and that was extremely impressive. I think he does take down Uriah Faber. As long as he doesn't leave his neck out, then the takedown is going to be there. So I see Cruz outpacing and outworking Faber on the feet. I see Cruz picking up some takedowns. I just see him outscoring Uriah Faber. I'm not convinced he's going to get a finish, but I do think Dominick Cruz wins convincingly this time after the first two fights were a lot closer and maybe Faber was a little bit of the better fighter the first times through. But this time around, I think it's going to be all Dominick Cruz, all 25 minutes. Now, this takes us to the main event of the evening. We have a middleweight title fight between champion Luke Rockhold, who is 15-2, and challenger Michael Bisping, who is 29-7. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Rockhold -1050, the comeback on Bisping +600. Now, this line was officially broken via ESPN, so shout out to those guys for us, and MMAOddsBreaker.com, of course, as well. Right now, the line is Rockhold -800, the comeback on Bisping is +550, so only a 50-cent drop on the dog, and there is more action coming in Bisping's way, especially the last couple of days. This line kind of bounced down a little bit early on and then went back up to 10, to at least 10-1, or if not 11-1 in some spots, and now it's coming back down as well. And part of that is, I mean, Bisping is a great fighter. I mean, you love him, hate the guy, whatever. The guy is one of the best middleweights of all time in the UFC. Yes, I know I'm going to get people saying questioning that or whatever, but outside of winning the title, I mean, he's one of those guys that it's like some of these other pro sports where the guy was one of the best in the league ever, but just never got to win a championship type of situation. I do believe that's Bisping now. Stylistically, overall, I mean, he does have some holes in his game and Rockhold can't exploit that. So this is a tough matchup. That's why he's opening as such a big underdog in this fight. And I don't believe he is going to come through. I mean, to me, he's going to have to land a heavy shot and probably put Rockhold out to win this fight. Now, Rockhold has been knocked out a couple times in his career and Bisping doesn't really have that kind of crazy knockout power, at least, you know, not in the UFC overall, but that's his best way to win this fight, and it's just going to be hard to do. I mean, Rockhold can hang with him on the feet. Obviously, Rockhold can do some damage. He ended up hurting Bisping the first time around on the feet as well, got the submission win. So his best path to victory, obviously, for Rockhold is getting this fight to the ground and submitting Bisping. Bisping's submission defense has gotten better through the years. His wrestling has gotten pretty good as well. So he's not the easiest guy to take down, but he's facing a guy like Rockhold that's really, I mean, just – one made him look silly in the first fight, let's face it. So I had to come out with a big number this time. I mean, it was pretty big the first time around as well, and Rockhold won decisively in that fight, so it makes sense to go up a little bit higher in this spot. And I do believe that Rockhold probably gets the job done again, and more than likely I think it's going to be by submission again, even though Bisping's submission defense has gotten better. I mean, Rockhold's so smooth and slick on the ground, I mean, he's just on another level. I mean, in as far as middleweights go, Jacare and Rockhold are two of the best for sure in a middleweight division as far as submission skill goes. So even if you have good sub D, fighting guys like this, it's not going to really hold off long enough before you get caught. So Rockhold, it's his fight to win or lose, and I do think he's probably going to win it. Now, he cannot underestimate Bisping. Bisping, this is his shot to win championship gold. You know, he knows, he's even stated he's an underdog. Nobody's expecting him to win this fight. So he doesn't really have a lot of pressure coming into this fight. More pressure probably is on Rockhold, because you go from fighting a very tough guy like Weidman, well, that will challenge you, and you know that it's a difficult fight and you maybe not win it, to a guy that you're probably going to be a little bit overconfident with, because you clearly won the first meeting. So hopefully Rockhold doesn't take him lightly, but I do believe Rockhold's just way better overall, and he is the middleweight champion for a reason, and he's probably going to get the job done. So much respect to Bisping. I mean, like I said, he is one of the best all-time fighters at middleweight, but unfortunately for him, he probably won't ever wear the gold. So I am going to pick Rockhold to win the fight.
The first time these guys fought, Luke Rockhold and Michael Bisping were actually pretty competitive in the opening round. The problem with Bisping, of course, is the fact that his chin is just not very good. Bisping can hang with Luke Rockhold on the feet. He is a very aggressive, solid striker with high volume. He can definitely make Rockhold work. He actually does throw a little bit more often and lands a little bit more often than Rockhold. The problem is that if these guys are trading toe-to-toe, at some point, Luke Rockhold is going to land a big shot, and Michael Bisping will not be able to endure it. That's what happened in the last fight. In most situations, Bisping's able to recover and then bounce back because he can change levels, he can close the distance, he can work for a takedown. But what happened last time? Rockhold landed a good shot on the feet, hurt Bisping. Bisping kind of latched onto him. Rockhold immediately transitioned to a guillotine choke and put him out. Rockhold has an incredibly underrated ground game, both with ground and pound and submissions. You saw it in the Lyoto Machida fight, where he brutalized Machida on the canvas. You saw it in the Chris Weidman fight, where he got top position against an elite wrestler, a guy that repeatedly took Anderson Silva down and beat him up on the ground. And Luke Rockhold advanced to mount and then just absolutely crushed Chris Weidman on the canvas. So Michael Bisping just does not have a lot of opportunity here. The only way I can see him winning this fight is if he does not get hurt throughout the five rounds and he just outpaces Luke Rockhold on the feet in a competitive stand-up war. And I just think that's way too difficult with how Luke Rockhold has a 5-inch reach advantage and Rockhold throws some nasty kicks. So I just think at some point one of those kicks or one of those punches is going to connect on Bisping, and Bisping is going to get hurt, and Luke Rockhold's finishing instincts are insane. So I expect Luke Rockhold to put Michael Bisping out at some point in this fight. Maybe he takes his time. Maybe Bisping's a little more cautious than usual and it lasts into the third or fourth round, but it's only a matter of time until Luke Rockhold finishes Michael Bisping in this fight for me. So my pick is definitely going to be Luke Rockhold. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 199. Part 2 of the Premium Oddscast featuring our premium bets will be out this Friday following the weigh-ins. So stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Oddsbreaker premium member. Also, if you'd like to become a premium member, just go to MMAoddsbreaker.com and you can sign up in the top right corner of our homepage. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.